Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action.
Hi, friends. It's Diane at Someone Gets Me. And today I have a really amazing guest for you. I met Mark Hess at the SENG conference in Houston, and you've already heard from a couple people that I met there. And the thing that drew me to Mark was his amazing energy. And you all know that I'm very sensitive to energy and kind of can tell about people from a distance. And I just had to go meet him. And the moment I went up to him, I felt so comfortable with this quiet confidence and this strength that was just beautiful. So in our conversation, we were talking about gifted kids and his work, which you will hear about. And I thought, oh, I have to have you on the podcast. People have to hear your wisdom and your care for things that are really important. So I got him to come and he said yes. And so now I have with me on the show today from Colorado Springs, an amazing, talented, gifted person who helps gifted children and has his whole career, it looks like. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Well, thank you. With that introduction, I hope I can live up to that introduction. My goodness.
Well, I think you can, because it's a natural part of who you are, that presence that's got such strength and kindness all wrapped in it all together. It's just really beautiful.
Thank you.
So I'd like to start a little bit about what got you started in working with gifted kids and making this something that's your life passion. How did this all get started?
Well, this was, for me, almost mid-career, about a third of the way through my career. I'd started as a high school teacher in a small town, and I had come to the Front Range to Manitou Springs, and I was an athletic director. And after 2 years of being an athletic director, I realized that I was missing the most important thing for me in education, and that was the kids. Mm-hmm. That in just 2 years, I felt like I didn't have the kids in my life anymore as kids. They were more on the periphery because I was an administrator. I was talking to a principal about that, and he said, you know what? If you have any doubts about being an administrator, you need to change as soon as you can, because once you get deep into this lifestyle, you won't be able to afford monetarily to go back. And very quickly after that, the gifted and talented position at the elementary school opened up. And my thought was literally, I think I can relate to these kids. And so for the last 3 months of school, I did both jobs, and I've never been back. It's quite a shock going to elementary school from high school.
Wow.
Yeah. The very first thing I did at elementary school was recess duty. And there were kids running and screaming and doing all kinds of things that we would have called the police for probably if it were happening in a high school. Because I've been a high school teacher my whole career up until then. I've been watching crowds as an athletic director, and this crowd was way beyond my ability at that point. That was a quick learning curve, and an education assistant who was sort of the professional recess lady, we would call her, just came up to him. She put her hand on my arm and said, Mark, don't worry about it. It's okay. And that was my introduction to elementary school.
I could just see it now, all the screaming and running around. That's hilarious.
I must have been standing there with my mouth open. I must have looked like I was in shock or something, because I didn't think it was so obvious. But she nailed it. She was right.
She knew you were stunned. Well, high school to elementary school, that's a big leap.
Yeah, a leap.
So what was your most exciting thing about going to elementary school and starting to work with gifted and talented kids?
Probably the best thing for me was that I did not have a curriculum. I didn't have a set curriculum. So I got to create everything. And I just started with following my passions and my idea was, oh, this is not what you're supposed to do with gifted kids. You're supposed to follow their passions, right? You're supposed to, and which we'll do. But in the beginning, not knowing what to do, I followed my passions. And I figured that if I loved something enough, that I could help them love it too. And if I offered enough variety and enough creative choice and enough and as many opportunities to express themselves as possible, that they would love it too, even if they didn't love the topic. So that's how I decided what to teach.
And so it worked, right?
It worked. It worked. I've never gone back. You know, my classroom has always been filled with projects. You know, and over the years, of course, I've had groups specific to literacy or groups specific to math or groups specific to engineering. But no matter what it was, we always try to keep our hands on the projects and always try to keep the kids in the middle of it. I don't want to be in the middle. I literally can go, I probably could go a whole hour without saying a word in my class some days. Now, I don't, of course, because I'm interacting with the kids. But I think a lot of days they could just walk in the door and get going. In fact, it bugs them when I put up at our school, when the weather's bad, we have a yellow flag that we hang outside the school. And that means that, you know, since the weather's bad, we're going to start the day inside the school and you have to wait patiently in the hallways to go to class. And so in my classroom, when I knew I needed to talk to all of the kids before they got going on their various interests, which were now very personalized, and so I had evolved that way, that I would hang a yellow flag from my doorway. And kids would always come in and they just do this, oh, the yellow flag's up. How long do we have to talk? Because they just want to get going. They want to get started on things. And I really think they could walk in and just start going. If there's no flag up, that's what they do. They walk in and they just start going. And I could just let them go and go and go.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Oh, the yellow flag. That's hilarious. So do you use yellow flags now?
Yes, I still have. Well, so this year I have, starting just a few days ago, I have a new job in my school district. I'm no longer in a classroom, but I was using it last year. I am now the gifted program specialist for our school district. We're a fairly large district for Colorado. We have about 50 schools. And so my job is going to be developing training and programming around gifted and talented. I'll still get to go to schools. I'll still get to work with kids. I'll still make sure that I get to do that. And I have a lot of longtime colleagues now who are doing the same job I used to do, which is gifted resource teacher, and great connections with them. And we've already started talking about when can I come do something in your classroom? Because I don't want to get to that same place that I was 20 years ago, where I'm saying, okay, where's the kids? You know, that's not going to happen this time.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really cool. So when you work with all these great gifted kids and these great minds, like that's one of the things I love about SING and all the work I do with gifted adults and kids and their families. I have a lot of families that I work with. Is all of the energy and the passion and the creativity, and that there's an energy about it that's palpable that just really like lights me up. And that's what I'm hearing from you, that kind of like, I have to be with the kids. I just have to be with the kids. That's the way it is. Yeah. So with all the craziness in the world all around, and here you have all these kids, does it help you maintain a little bit more hope for the future? Or how do you see the future unfolding with all this, all the uncertainty, and then yet all this brilliance?
You know, I mean, that's a hard question. I have just finished reading this wonderful book, iGen, that came out with all the data and research about this current generation and how they're growing up and what their trends are. And I just can't help thinking that, you know, someone who gets to be my age, you know, we always want to say, oh yeah, you know, we always want to point out the problems. But I see lots of wonderful things from kids all the time. I just can't help thinking that, you know, that human spirit, that hope that is so present in children carries through to the extent that we're going to be okay. I mean, that's a tough question. This is a tough political climate that we're in. And so I wonder where this world in the United States is going. But we have great young people, and we always will.
Right. And so they have a level of optimism. And I've heard a lot of adults that I've spoken to, gifted and other visionaries, and they talk about the fact that as the children kind of get older and they get into their teens and early 20s and things like that, that maybe the optimism gets a little tenuous, but then it kind of picks up later. And so I've been thinking about this a lot myself, you know, like what good can I keep giving and doing to help support kind of that, all the transition, like for gifted people, especially the whole thing, because the whole experience, I guess. So what are some things that you would like to instill in children, or you would like to suggest maybe that some of our listeners think about that would help keep hope and optimism alive?
You know, what's really wonderful about kids is they're recreating themselves all the time. I mean, when they look to the future and they see themselves and they see these hopes are just so clear to them. I like a kid will say to me, sometime in February, Mr. Hess, who are you going to be for Halloween? This is February. It's like, oh, well, I really hadn't thought about who I'm going to be, but it's not, how are you going to dress? It's not what costume you're going to wear, but the question is, who are you going to be? And I hope that as adults that we can always ask that question, you know, who will I be in 9 months from now at Halloween? Now we're only 2 months away, so I got to decide really fast. But who will we be? How will we have learned? You know, how will we have changed? I just think these kids just have this beautiful innocence and acceptance and love. And the biggest thing about I've taught all grade levels, and that's what elementary kids carry with them more strongly than anything else. It's just this acceptance, this belief in possibility that, yeah, who will I be? Mm-hmm. And they just thoroughly believe in who they might be the next day or the next week or the next year. And I wish we could hold on to those things. We get so set in different paths. I loved your podcast about the stories we tell ourselves. We get so set in certain stories at different times of our life. And I think the older we get, the harder it might be to change those stories unless we're mindful about life. So I don't even remember what your question was, Diane, but I think I kind of came in some sort of big circle, but I may have had an answer in there.
There was the answer in there. And I was just thinking about being focused and mindful. And then you brought up the word. So I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. And I think it is important that we're all mindful and teaching our children and our young people and other adults who never learned the art of critical thinking and that whole discernment idea. So what are some things you do to help somebody develop their critical thinking or discernment skills?
Ask questions. Don't give answers, but just ask questions. And ask questions that are safe questions too. And by that, I mean, and I'm talking about kids, I guess I'm not talking about other adults. Asking questions about maybe literature or questions about primary source photos or questions about possible situations, asking questions about other kids, you know, like made up, fabricated other kids, asking those sorts of questions and just listening and letting the kids sort out different answers to it. And so they don't have to talk about themselves. Sometimes they end up talking about themselves, or sometimes they're really talking about themselves when they're not talking about themselves, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But yeah, just asking the questions and not being the person who gives the answers. Just, you know, modeling a mindfulness, modeling a sense of wonder.
I think that's a really profound answer, because I remember working with some kids. This was a while ago. And the teachers and a lot of the parents were in this phase, this was probably 20 years ago, where it was all about giving the kids all the answers and how we were trying to teach the parents not to answer for the kids and not to do the work for them and all of that, you know. And I think that makes a difference. I think that's a very profound point. It sounds simple and easy, but I see people doing it all the time. Like, let's talk for this other person or answer for them. And children need to be nourished and explained that it's okay. Keep asking the questions and keep talking about it. And then they learn that skill. I think that's a great answer.
And, you know, I'm going back, you had talked about the energy, sort of intensity that you see in gifted kids. And it's just funny. That was something I was specifically thinking about right before we started talking. And I was wondering, you know, why isn't that the first thing we talk about when we talk about giftedness? I think the conversation is starting to change to the more social emotional aspects. And I think that's also a response to what's going on in our world with young people. But why don't we talk about that obvious intensity that if you just look a little bit, even a quiet kid, it's just like they broadcast this. They broadcast it from their eyes. They broadcast it from their movements. And some kids much more than others, definitely. But I had meant to comment on that earlier, and it made me think about that again. But that energy is a very, very hopeful sort of energy.
Yes, I think it's very light. As in bright light, you know, and when I feel it, it even wakes up that little part of me again, like, wow, you know.
Yeah. Isn't that fun? It's fun to be around.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I love being around gifted adults who have allowed that light to stay brighter. You know, they haven't squashed it a lot, or maybe they rekindled it some, you know, and that's kind of fun too. It's like, whoa, we've been doing this for a long time. Yay. You know, that kind of fun thing. It's so true. It's amazing to me. So how do you help kids who maybe are frustrated because they're trying to learn something and either they're, you know, can't process it the way they want to, you know, they're going through their learning curve frustrations. And I ask you this because a lot of the listeners that are listening to this show that have spoken to me anyway have gifted kids, whether they call them gifted or not. It's funny. I had one person come in my home and I had a book on my table that said gifted. It's part of the title. And she goes, oh my God, it's a thing. She just thought I just kind of made up the word and was just saying it, and that everybody I knew was gifted and that's just what it was, and completely did not understand or put together what it really was until there was a book that had it in the title. And she's got children and she's trying to sort out how to handle the frustration of learning and homework and all of that. And so what are some things that you could maybe say to somebody who's kind of trying to figure out the most effective way to help their gifted child, and maybe they don't have gifted resource people in their schools, or they're not really sure what questions to ask even?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big question. That gets at the heart of a lot of like underachievement and things like that. If there is such a thing as underachievement, I'm not sure that there is. That's a tough question. I think about middle schoolers who I've taught. I taught for 7 years in a middle school. Started off with literally checking my blood pressure every single day before I went to work, because it was the most nightmarish thing I'd ever decided to do, to just loving those kids. And because when middle schoolers are on your side, they're on your side, period. They're on your side. And just, it took a while to build up that trust with them. But I'm digressing. Those are the kids I think of. Because elementary kids are so much not frustrated in a big way yet, at least the kids I know. By the time they're in fifth grade, I definitely see some changes coming, especially for girls. Some kids who are highly perfectionist, who don't want to try things, who don't want to risk it, who don't want to put themselves out there when as third graders they would have. And so this shift is starting to come. I mean, the world's starting to come at them. The peer group is starting to come at them, I guess, is a kind of a blunt way to put it. And I'd see that in middle school more, kind of like a rebellious kid, a kid who's already not disaffected. You know, they're not going to participate in school. If you see that from an elementary kid, that's a really big existential crisis. I mean, I just really don't see it very much from elementary. But for middle schoolers, and it's a tough, tough age for girls. They've just, the research shows that the girls are most confident when they're 10 years old. And that confidence and self-image falls and falls and falls and falls and doesn't start rising again. It gets to its lowest point when they begin college. And then it starts to rise again. And it doesn't return to age 10 levels until they're 50, until age 50. And so the middle school, so many middle school girls come in sixth grade and they're leaders and they're exuberant and they're out there and they're just, they're hugely confident still. And by the time they're in eighth grade, so many of them become quieter and quieter and just quiet. And then the boys tend to be a little bit more of those achievement problem. And I just think more than anything else, it's just a safe place. Kids just need that safe place. They need that as many adults as possible who understand and accept who they are and who can say things like, you're not going to be right all the time. Don't even try. You know, it's not going to work that way. It's okay to try something and not be good at it and then demonstrate by your behavior that, yeah, that was okay. You know, and I think sometimes we say things and we think we mean them, and then we demonstrate that we didn't really think that. Like, it's okay to fail, because behind some very perfectionist kids are very perfectionist parents too. Just a way of being, and I'm one of them. And you know, you really have to train yourself to, you love your kids and you want to be the safe place for them. And sometimes you have to train yourself to communicate that, to demonstrate that, and not let your own anxiety get in the way. Maybe the answer is you need to be okay with yourself first. Maybe that's the answer for parents, that be mindful, be okay with yourself first. Figure out ways to show your kid that you love and accept them. Doesn't mean everything's okay. But, you know, how are you going to show them that this is their safe place? This is their safe person. Big, big question, Diane. It's not fair. I can't answer that in a podcast.
Well, I think you answered it really well. And I think, you know, being okay with yourself is the answer. It's the profound answer in it all, and all that radiates out of that, of being okay with ourselves first and then being safe for our children. Everything else comes from there. If they're not safe, they're not going to grow and evolve, because they're not safe. And if the adults, of all the big people, the parents, the teachers, everybody, if we're not really being okay with ourselves and doing that work, whatever that would mean, then how are we going to help our children be okay with themselves and have good critical thinking and good relationships and learn how to listen and feel safe? So I think you did answer the question. So I want to turn the dial a little bit and talk a little bit about your dad, and how has it been being a gifted father with gifted children? And I'm sure your wife is gifted too. And how has that been? Just because I have some gifted men I work with, and they don't have very many people that actually really talk to them about that, because mostly it's the women that are all talking. So how has it been for you, an educator who's a dad, who you've got a great daughter who you've told me about, and what's that experience just like?
I have a daughter and a son. They've been great reference points for me as a teacher. I wish I had the book. I never had the book, and I still don't have the book. I should have the T-shirt on the back. I could maybe have gifted parent on the front, but the back would say still haven't figured it out. And how many times I've read some professional material or some research about gifted boys or gifted girls, and then I'm sharing it with a colleague whose kids are young. You know, and saying, man, I wish I would have had this book when my son was five, or I wish I would have had the research about how to talk to your kids that Carol Dweck talks about, you know, how to be specific in your praise. I wish I would have had that when my daughter was five. And so I don't think I really ever, as a parent, I never really thought about specifically nurturing this person as a gifted student. And I mean, that's kind of how I teach too. It's just, I love certain things. I love passions and my own passions and what do I love to do? And kids see that and then support them in their passions. And parents always ask that, you know, that parenting question, well, what can I do? And I always say, support your child's passions, but don't make it your passion. It's not about you. And unless you happen to share the exact same passion, it's not all that likely, but help support their passions. And it's just that acceptance. I guess I never really thought about, it's always been after the fact that I wish I had that book about gifted kids instead of living it in the moment. Though it does so much help to understand that my kids are probably experiencing the world with the same sort of intensities that I did. And I think I've learned more about myself as watching my kids grow than I have about, because gifted education was not a thing when I was 10 years old. There was no one around telling me what intensities were all about. That research hadn't even been applied to giftedness yet. I think I've learned more about myself as a kid than I've really been like a gifted child guide per se. I've just been a dad, you know, just kind of sharing my energy, I guess would be the way I'd put it, and enjoying my kids' energy and encouraging them. And, you know, of course I always had all the fatherly sorts of advice that all the standard things that we say to kids too, you know, about being safe and following your heart and all those sorts of things. So I don't know that my parent or my kids especially benefited from having a dad who was a gifted and talented teacher, other than they got to do a lot of cool projects at a very young age when they'd come with me to workshops and classes and things like that. They got to do what the older kids were doing. And that was always fun to them.
Oh, that's cool. I love that. It's just living in the moment with them. It's so beautiful. So share with us, if you wouldn't mind, a little bit about your portable, gifted, and talented work and how that come about, the portable piece of it. And tell us a little bit about what it serves and who it serves and how it all works.
All right. I was literally teaching in a portable, which many gifted and talented teachers teach in. And I would just thought, okay, this is portable, gifted, and talented, this little company, because it's all stuff you can take with you from school to school. A lot of teachers in my school district, gifted teachers, go from school to school too. So it's portable in that way. But the way that came about was when I was still teaching middle school, and this would be about probably 7 or 8 years ago now. No, it's got to be more than 9 years ago now. A sixth grade teacher said to me, you know, you have a lot of really creative ideas. Do you have some that you can share with me? Because I just want to make my classroom more creative. And I said, sure, I do. And I thought yet I'd have a filing cabinet full of them. But instead, what I had was a filing cabinet full of overhead slides that the ink had been rubbed off and notes scribbled in margins of different papers. And I had all of these creative units and projects that I had done with my students over the years, but they weren't written down anywhere, not really. They would just come as they came, and sometimes we'd do them once and we'd be done. And so at that time, in the summers, my son was very involved with all kinds of different sports. And in the mornings, I would sit down and I would write and I would write and I would write. And I would just start writing down my lessons and units. And in the afternoon, I got to go watch a doubleheader or baseball or whatever. It was a great summer gig. But portable, gifted, and talented, now I have over 200 lessons and units specifically designed for gifted learners. Most of them are around the fifth grade wheelhouse, but I have things that go as young as pre-K, and some materials that would work very well with even adults, but mostly it's upper elementary materials. And that's what I do. I write, I create, and make them available to everyone. Last year, I hit, no, 2 years ago now, boy, time goes fast, I hit year number 30 in education. And in Colorado, that's the year that is the ideal retirement year. I put in my retirement papers in December and thought a lot about what I would be doing in the future. And I withdrew them in January because that's just who I am. And I, sorry about that. I decided that what I wanted to do was share even more. And so I'm trying to really try to get out and get to conferences and make presentations and share all these wonderful kids and these wonderful experiences with as many people as I can. So that's why you met me at the SANE conference. So that was the traveling show of the digital world of Portable Gifted and Talented that you met there. And that's, you know, I'm about the activities and the projects and the understanding and the social emotional and sharing where I've been with gifted kids.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. All the kids that you've had a chance to interact with have been so blessed to know you. How amazing.
I always look at it the other way around.
Mm-hmm. So the way around too. It's both ways, I think. Yeah. You know, though, you know, like when we look back and we think about this teacher here or that teacher there that really meant something to us, you know, there's a lot of kids walking around thanking you on some level, because you made that difference, because your heart is so authentic and real in it that there's no mistake.
But I thank them.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like I tell people all the time, I have tears in my eyes. You spot it, you got it, right? You know, everybody's a mirror back for each other. And yes. So the children are mirroring to you your essence and light, and you're mirroring to them their essence and light. And in that, there's this beautiful synergy where everybody, you and them, get this amazing experience.
Yeah, isn't that, you can, sometimes you just stop and you just say, this is not possible except for this relationship that's going on right now. I never would have experienced this moment or anything close to it without this relationship going on right now.
Yeah, yeah. There's no words for it. It's just beautiful. Well, I'm glad I met you at the conference. Because I felt that.
And me as well.
I felt that in you. I'm like, uh-huh. I felt that. It was, and I'm really glad that you came on the podcast. So can anybody buy your units? Like if parents are listening and they wanna get a hold of some of these units and maybe do some things with their children to enhance their education, or do you only service it for educators?
Yeah, so I think a number of homeschoolers or parents in the summer buy the lessons and units. They're teacher's guides, and they're step-by-step. And I was an English major, so I'm forever explaining everything in them. And I have a store on Teachers Pay Teachers, which is a clearinghouse for lessons and units written by teachers for teachers and for parents. And I'm called Portable Gifted and Talented on that site. And then you can link that through my website, giftedlearners.org, when you click on lessons and units. And you can click on the presentations, that some of the presentations I've done, if you're curious about, you know, what I get to talk about at SANE or at the Colorado Gifted Conference, things like that too. You can kind of look through those PowerPoints if parents are interested about those sorts of things too.
Great. And so I will be sure that your websites are in the show notes, so you can check out what Mark has been doing in the show notes by clicking on his website and checking it all out. It's very, very interesting and fascinating. And the thing I think that really moves me is your passion behind it, but the fact that people can use this to supplement or grow in all different kinds of ways and really support their children in a way that's really healthy and time-tested. You know, you didn't just sit down one day and write things without the experience and consciousness and awareness and understanding. So it's really profound in my mind.
Very kid-tested too. This is all stuff that I've used in my classroom.
So it's perfect. So a couple other questions before I will let you go. These are a little bit more on the personal side. And one of them is, what kinds of things do you do to help yourself with decreasing stress or self-care? Like if you just, you know, you find yourself stressed after a crazy day, like when you were teaching in middle school, what are things that you do to decompress?
Take walks and play golf right now. That's what I'm doing now. And just be at home. Nothing profound. But I find a lot of my best ideas come when I'm taking walks. For 20 years, I commuted 50 minutes each way, and which was really actually a blessing. It was always a decompress on the way home because it was light traffic. As a teacher, you leave at 3 o'clock, there's no traffic. And I was driving up into the mountains in Colorado, and the foothills, beautiful, got to do a lot of thinking. And on the way there, it was the same thing, but it was more of thoughts of the future, you know, what was coming up for the day and what I would be doing. And that was definitely a decompression for me, but just walking, playing golf. Yeah.
Well, golf courses are so spiritual in their own way.
And there's one right across the street from my house. So it's perfect.
Oh my God. That's perfect. That's perfect. And so what is your favorite food to eat?
I call myself a beagle. I like to eat, period. I love food. I don't know. I guess I would say a cheeseburger. I've always said I could eat a cheeseburger or pizza for every single meal the rest of my life, which probably would be mean that I had a very short life in front of me. But cheeseburgers, pizza.
Oh, that's perfect. And so the last question is, I've covered a lot and I've asked you some really interesting questions through my intuition on this time. And is there anything on your heart that you would like to share with our listeners that I haven't asked you about, or something you thought you might want to say that I didn't ask you about? Is there anything left undone?
I don't think there's anything. It's always undone, isn't it? Isn't it always left undone? It's always left undone. And I don't have anything. I'm not a question asker. I'm a sit back and listen sort of person, and I'll answer your questions, but no, I really don't have anything.
All right. Well, then there you go. That's perfect. So the moral of the story is to ask safe questions and be sure you're a good listener. And then when you're real with yourself, great things happen. Yeah, they do. So you've been listening to my great conversation with Mark Hess, my new friend I met at Sing. He's an amazing educator, an amazing person. So check out his website and be inspired as we have inspired each other on this interview, and I'm sure you have felt it. So remember, everybody, to put your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. You're a rock star here on purpose with a purpose. So go out there and let your light shine. And until the next episode of Someone Gets Me, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit someonegetsme.com. Again, thanks for listening.